We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Brent Aiken. And on tonight's episode, I will be reviewing, I'll be doing a double review of Oppenheimer and Barbie. But first, I'd like to say sorry that I didn't get this episode out last night, as I said I would last week. I was just kind of tired yesterday from, you know, after having seen both movies back to back, and I just decided to hold off on reviewing it until, you know, today. So, but I just wanted to apologize for the delay. That's why I put it off until today. Just a heads up, I will be going into spoilers, not everything that happens in both movies, obviously, but I will be spoiling some stuff about these movies. So if you haven't seen these movies and you don't want to be spoiled, pause the episode right now, go watch them, and then come back and listen to the rest of the episode. But if you don't care about spoilers and you'd still like to hear my thoughts on both movies, then you may proceed. So I'm going to start off with Oppenheimer because I saw that one first. And the reason why I decided to see Oppenheimer first was, I figured I'd go see the longer, darker, more depressing, serious drama movie first, and then end my double feature with the cherry on top that was the lighthearted, shorter, comedic, you know, goofy comedic movie of Barbie. You know, I figured, oh yeah, I'll just, that'd be a good way. That'd be a good order to watch the two of them in. And on the, well, goofier, more, the happier movie, you know. And but they were both really good. And basically, Oppenheimer is, last week on my ranking Christopher Nolan's movies episode, I said that this is his. Or I mentioned that, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I'll mention where I'd rank Oppenheimer among his filmography. I think if I had to rank it among his movies, it'd be between The Prestige and Batman Begins. So it would go right at number 6. So it'd be in the top half of his list of movies. So The Prestige and everything from 6 to 11 would get bumped from 7 to 12. So The Prestige is at 7 and everything else behind that would be go from 8 to 12. And then Batman Begins and everything from 5 to 1 would stay as it was. Like, nothing's changed there. It's just that Oppenheimer would get pushed, like, it squeezed in the middle of the two of them. So it'd go right at number 6. Top half of his movies, not pretty bad. Or not too bad, I'd say. The movie, if you don't know what the movie's about, basically, it's about the life of J. Robert Oppenheimer, who was a theoretical physicist. And he basically was the father of the atomic bomb. And he was the head scientist of the Manhattan Project, which was basically a group of scientists and military leaders that built a town in the New Mexican desert that they named Los Alamos, where they spent $2 billion and 3 years of research and money basically building the first atomic bomb, trying to get it off the ground and see if it would work. And yeah, the movie goes, showing you the painstakingly long process it took, how much time and effort it actually did take to get this thing going. And, when they finally, blow it up, when they finally test it, when we get to that point in the movie, you're like, hey, it worked. Great, finally, I mean, not that it was like a bore to sit through them, building the bomb, but like it's you feel like great as in like, oh yeah, that, you feel great for them. You're like, oh yeah, they finally got through with it. Nice. Or they finally, got it to work. That's nice. All their time and effort paid off, It just shows. Yeah, just mostly his life from like the mid 20s to like the mid 40s, so like around like a 20-year period. And like with a lot of Christopher Nolan's movies, the film does kind of play with time and jump around between different timelines throughout the story that's being told. And And yeah, it's you know, like the main story, you know, or what the yeah, the main story we get is Oppenheimer, you know, building the bomb, and then we have a story like in the not so far future where it's after the bomb's been built, and Lewis Strauss, who is a senior member of the United States Atomic Energy Commission, basically trying to you know, he's got some beef with Oppenheimer, and he's trying to he's at a congressional hearing, I believe. Yeah. And he's trying to get you know, Oppenheimer, like he's basically trying to make it so where his license will get renewed, or not his license, but his security clearance. Like he's trying to get his security clearance revoked, and because yeah, he has a grudge with Oppenheimer. And it all started like back when he first, you know, started at college, and like he talked with Einstein. There was a scene where yeah, they're out on the campus, and he's talking with Einstein, and Strauss is, you know, as Einstein's walking away from the little lake that they're the little pond that they're standing near, he tries to say something to him. He's like, "Hey, what's up?" And then Einstein just walks past him, and it's like, "Oh, what was that about?" You know, so so ever since then, he felt like I, you know, Oppenheimer told Einstein something about Strauss that, you know, was maybe kind of like a smear campaign to, or you know, like not a smear campaign, but something he probably told him something about him, or he suspected that Oppenheimer told Einstein something about him that was negative. So, you know, ever since that moment, he kind of, you know, in a way wanted Oppenheimer blacklisted, you know, or at least his security clearance revoked. And yeah, it's just the movie's really great at you know, just like the acting from everyone is fantastic. Going to Lou, you know, since I just got done talking about him, I'll start with Lewis Strauss. Actually, you know what? No, I'll start with Oppenheimer. So Oppenheimer is in this movie is played by Cillian Murphy, who you might know. He has been a recurring cast member in Christopher Nolan's movies ever since Batman Begins, where he played Dr. Crane, aka Scarecrow. And it was nice because since he's been in so many of his movies, you know, he's never had the main role before of one of his movies. So it was nice that he had like the lead role, the titular role in a Nolan movie. Like this was his first movie with him being the main character. And I liked that. And I thought Cillian Murphy did a fantastic job. And you know, the and you know, and because we skip forward and go backwards in time, you know, showing different points of him throughout his life, you know, like within like a 20 year span or so, the makeup artists, the practical makeup, you know, to make him look older and younger, I thought the makeup artists did a great job with making him, not only him, but also the other characters in the movie, look older and younger, you know, depending on which scene and what place and time we were in. I'm like, oh yeah, you guys did a great job with that. And but yeah, Cillian Murphy was great. Like, and there are times in the movie where we get to see things from his point of view, like when they're starting to when he's gathered the scientists, you know, they built the town, and he has some of his most respected scientists in that room, like in this like little yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just kind of like a little boardroom, and they're, you know, talking about the inner workings of like, you know, how they're going to get this bomb built. You know, they got to get some plutonium and uranium, and we, as he's explaining, you know, how this bomb is going to be built, and not just in that scene, but in that scene and some other scenes scattered throughout the movie, every now and then we'll see glimpses of Oppenheimer's point of view. Like we'll go inside his mind for like a brief second, and we get to see him imagining the inner workings and the process of an atomic bomb actually detonating, actually going off. And those scenes are visually stunning. They look spectacular. And yeah, it just looks fantastic. And also like after the atomic bomb is dropped on Hiroshima, after the United States drops it on Hiroshima, and Nagasaki also gets some serious blowback from the explosion, or from the explosion, He's at a press conference, and we get to see, he's, giving a speech, but he's also kind of, like, we, from our perspective, we hear, or it's kind of like from his perspective, we get to hear, the sound of everyone cheering, fading out, and, we just hear, a ringing in his ear, and, and it's just, the way they showcase his anxiety and the trauma he's experienced from, realizing that, oh shit, this thing I created, we dropped it on a bunch of people. Not only a bunch of Japanese people died, but a lot of American people died too. Or, I mean, we had some casualties from our side, that, were caught in the bomb going off, and he just feels so guilty about it, and that's some of Killian's best acting in the movie there. In that scene where, he's explaining the press conference, he's like, hey, we won, we did it, and they're all cheering for him, and we just hear the ringing in his ear getting louder, and the crowd's cheering fading out, and we get to see this big, this flashing light, or this ever-growing glowing light, that he's seen, and it's from the point of view, he's seen almost like an atomic the atomic bomb going off. And we get to see everyone in the crowd, their skin start to peel away. And then as he's walking away from the podium, he steps on what he thinks is a skeleton. He steps down, he looks down, and he like his foot has caved in the chest of this, burnt dead guy. And it's just a burnt skeleton. And he's just looking down in horror. He's like, oh shit, so he's clearly going through some shit, and it gets worse from there. But yeah, it's very great, and also the blinding growing light of the atomic bomb also comes into play, whenever, speaking of his anxiety, whenever he's having a tense, very intense conversation with someone, that light, the ringing gets louder and the light grows brighter. And it just adds to the tension, because it's almost like those arguments are getting so heated, it's almost like they're an atomic bomb going off or about to go off, gearing up for the detonation, and it's that's cool how Nolan kind of adds even more tension to those scenes by adding the oh yeah, the atomic bomb, it's almost like, yeah, an atomic bomb is going off in the middle of this argument, or about to go off. And it's cool how they kind of play with the lighting and the sound mixing, the sound editing with those scenes. But yeah, not only is Cillian Murphy great, but Emily Blunt, who plays his wife Kitty, does a great job. It would have been cool if we got a little bit more of her, but I mean, she had a good amount, a decent amount of screen time, and I thought she played her part well, especially the longer it goes on and the more unhinged and pissed off she becomes when, Strauss isn't backing down from, isn't letting up from trying to blackball and blacklist Oppenheimer, trying to smear his name in the mud, And she's like, why aren't you fighting back? And just how aggressive, how mad, how, more and more angry she gets throughout the movie. I was like, oh yeah, she's, acting her ass off too. But Matt Damon plays General Leslie Groves. He's Oppenheimer's military handler. He's like the kind of co-lead of the Manhattan Project, and he does a great job. There's some great scenes of just the two of them, talking about how this, whole process is gonna go, what's gonna happen if the bomb actually goes off. There's a, and it's actually a pretty funny exchange of dialogue. But there's one scene where, they're 2 hours away, because it's in the they were about to test the bomb, but there's a severe thunderstorm going on, so they have to ride out the storm. And there's a scene where they're talking, waiting out the storm, and General Groves is like, wait, are you saying that there's a chance that if we push that button, we'll destroy the world? And Oppenheimer's like, he's like, what do you want? He's like, oh, he's like, no, there's a near zero chance. And then Groves is like, near zero. And Oppenheimer's like, well, what do you want from theory alone? And then Groves responds like, zero would be nice. And that was a pretty funny little back and forth between the two of them. But yeah, I like their dynamic. They're kind of, and they kind of form a friendship and a little bit of trust as the movie goes on, when it becomes clear to Groves that Oppenheimer is putting his heart and soul and blood, sweat, and tears and everything, his everything into this project. And that was cool to see. Lewis, the guy who plays Lewis Strauss, the senior member of the United States Atomic Energy Commission, was Robert Downey Jr. And he, does a fantastic job. There's some scenes where he's kind of becoming a little bit unhinged at, the fact that he seems to be losing, at a certain point, he thinks that he's losing, control of the situation when we get the black and white scenes of it's in the future, then again, not too distant future, and it's the black and white scenes of him at a congressional hearing, and he's trying to get Oppenheimer, his security clearance revoked, and you could just tell that he's becoming more and more unhinged at just the idea that he might not win this, and he might not be able to smear Oppenheimer's name through the mud is, just pissing him off beyond belief. It's making him go even further and further insane. Maybe not quite insane, but like he's letting his emotions and he's letting his hate for Oppenheimer maybe get the better of him, And yeah, there's some great scenes with him, especially towards the end, where he's getting even more and more enraged at the fact that Oppenheimer, he might lose this case and Oppenheimer might, not get his security clearance revoked. So that's great. And then, to round out the main cast, we have Florence Pugh, who plays Jean Tatlock, who is Oppenheimer's, on-again, off-again girlfriend. And she does a great job. And for anyone listening who's wondering, there is a spicy sex scene between the two of them. So any of you guys and girls who have a crush on Cillian Murphy or Florence Pugh or both, just know that, yeah, going in, that there is a little spicy scene or two between the two of them. I didn't quite expect it going in. Or I kind of expected it. I didn't really quite expect it. I thought maybe something might happen between the two of them. But when that happened, I'm like, oh, okay, that was unexpected, but it wasn't unwelcome. Because I have a huge, I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I have a huge crush on Florence Pugh. She's like one of my celebrity crushes, and everything I've seen her in, I think was terrific in. I think she's a fantastic actress, on top of being gorgeous and British. points for me if you're a British girl. I love the British accent. I just think it's incredibly sexy. But anyway, slight tangent. I wanted to mention that. And that's just like the main five characters. Like the cast is stacked, not only in terms of like the main characters, but the supporting cast, it's insanely stacked too. Like there's Rami Malek is in the movie, Matthew Modine's there, Kenneth Branagh, who played Sador in Tenet, I believe. Wasn't he Sador? I think he was. Sador, Kat's asshole Russian husband, in Tenet, the villain in that movie, which was Christopher Nolan's, last movie before this one. And then Josh Peck is in the movie. It has a little moment or two in there. Who else is in the movie? Tom Conti, I believe, plays Albert Einstein, who I don't think I've seen him in anything, but he looked just like Albert Einstein and sounded like him from what I remember him sounding like. So I thought he did a great job. David Krumholtz. Oh yeah, Jack Quaid. He's in the movie. Alex Wolff, Peter from Hereditary. He has a couple scenes in the movie. And yeah, there's more. I'm looking through the cast list right now. There's way more. Gary Oldman played President Truman, which I didn't even know that was him when I looked at it, I guess because he looked so vastly different than how he did when he played Gordon in the Dark Knight trilogy that I just didn't register that it was him, and he also only has like I think one, maybe two scenes, if that. But I saw his name in the credits. I'm like, oh shit, who did he play? And then I saw that it was President Truman, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But yeah, so, but the sound editing was great. You know, like, it's, you know, not only in the scenes where, you know, we got to see from Oppenheimer's point of view, like, you know, him getting more and more anxious, and like, you know, like the ringing in his ear getting louder and all that, and the, you know, him envisioning the people in the press conference, you know, like their skin melting off from the bomb. Not only was it great there, but it was also great in the scene where they actually detonate the bomb, because for like the first, it's like it goes on for like 2 minutes. Like we see they finally detonate the bomb, and we just see the explosion, and we see everyone's reactions to it, and it's a good like minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes before we actually hear the sound. And I thought that was cool because that is like accurate to, you know, how sound travels. It's like you would see the explosion before you'd hear the sound of it. And I it just, you know, it kept you in suspense that whole like minute and a half, 2 minutes, because you're like, okay, well, we're gonna hear the sound at some point, but it's like a matter of when, and it's also a matter of how loud is it gonna be when we hear the explosion. And you know, it didn't quite make me jump, but I was kind of like, oh shit. It startled me quite, you know, just a little bit, because I was like, oh shit, you know, like I was anticipating it, but then I was like, it caught me off guard because of how long it took to get. I mean, not that it like dragged on, but of how long it took for the actual sound of the explosion to, you know, to travel, you know, to get to everyone. I was like, oh shit, there it is, you know. But and that, yeah, and that was all practical. You know, they actually built a bomb and blew it up. And I you know, and again, only Nolan would do that, would go the extra mile. I mean, not only him, but Nolan is one of the few that would go the extra mile to practically build a bomb and actually detonate it instead of just using CGI, you know, because, you know, why take the easy way out when you can like put hard work into something, you know, like, and put effort and time into it. Not to say that CGI doesn't take time or effort, but I mean, like, you know, if you want to have it look as realistic as you can, you know, try to go for either get some of the best CGI, try to, you know, get some of the best visual effects artists you can to work on the CGI, or, you know, go, you know, with practical effects, you know, and try, you know, do it that way. But yeah, the movie was great. It's just at 3 hours. I didn't really feel the runtime. But that being said, I wouldn't have cared if, I would have been cool with, like having like maybe 10, 15 minutes, shaved off of the runtime, you know. But, I mean, other than that, it didn't, to me, it didn't drag on. But it would have been nice had it been just a tiny bit shorter. But other than that, I mean, that's really my only nitpick or complaint, really, is that it could have been shorter. But other than that, yeah, I loved the movie. I'm trying to think of what else to say about it. I guess that's pretty much it. Just yeah, it was another great Nolan movie, Christopher Nolan movie. It's at number 6 in my list of his movies, and if I had to give it a rating, I'd give it an 8 out of 10. I feel like, yeah, this definitely is gonna go somewhere in my top 10 of the year. And if you're wondering, yes, I or no, I didn't like this quite as much as Barbie. But you know, I'll explain why in a minute. Well, I guess really my explanation would be, yeah, I'll just go ahead and explain. Really, I guess the reason why I liked Barbie a little better was because, one, it was a little shorter, and two, I guess I just liked, I guess the pacing, it was a little faster paced, and I guess I just liked that it was, oh yeah, it was, like I said, it was a lighthearted, goofy comedy, so I appreciated that, and I guess liked it a little bit more because of that, you know. But that being said, you know, I still, Oppenheimer is a solid 8 out of 10. I feel like that's a good rating. And just because I liked Barbie better doesn't mean that, you know, don't let that deter any of you from going to see one or the other if you want to go see both. Like, I recommend going to see both. They're both great. I'll probably reiterate this at the end. I guess I could have saved that for the end, but it's fine. I'll probably mention that after my review of Barbie. But yeah, so Oppenheimer was great, and now I guess that being said, I'll go ahead and move on to my review of Barbie. So, yeah, like I said, I liked Barbie just a little bit better than Oppenheimer. If I had to rank it, I'd give it an 8.5 out of 10. That being said, though, I still did enjoy both of them a lot. I liked and loved both of them a lot. But yeah, this one's just a little bit better to me. And yeah, so the movie is basically, it was directed by Greta Gerwig, and who I've not seen. I know who she is. I haven't seen any of her movies. She's only directed two thus far. She directed, her first movie was Lady Bird in 2017, which I've heard of but I haven't seen, and Little Women, which came out in 2019, which I've also heard and haven't seen. And obviously that is based on the book by the same name, because there's a book called Little Women, and I think it's like the seventh film adaptation of the book. So she's not the first to turn that book into a movie, but I'm sure I've heard people say like her adaptation of that book was pretty good too. But yeah, so I knew who she was, and I had heard her I'd heard of her movies before. I've never seen them. But when this tr when the trailer for the movie came out back in December, the teaser trailer, and then they dropped the trailer for Oppenheimer, I think around the same week, within like the same week, I believe they dropped the trailers. And around, I think it was in December of last year, of 2022, when they announced that they were both, when both those trailers came out, the release date was attached to both of them. And yeah, and ever since then, there's just been an explosion of memes that have come from the internet, and a bunch of comments and everything, just from everyone talking about like, oh, who do you think's gonna win the box office, or which one are you gonna watch? Which one are you gonna guys gonna watch first? Are you gonna watch both of them, or and just yeah, just a bunch of memes, and just it exploded, in and it gave. I feel like it gave both of these movies, it threw them even more into the pop culture zeitgeist. And I don't know if the marketing departments for the marketing teams for both of these movies knew what they were doing, but I have a feeling like they probably collaborated and maybe got together with each other and said, "Hey, look, wouldn't it be hilarious? Wouldn't it be funny if we released both of these movies on the same weekend just to see who's gonna go see what?" And I feel like, they were serious with it, but they were like, it'd be funny just to like release a very serious, like dramatic, historical, retelling of, Oppenheimer's life, the theoretical physicist who created the nuclear bomb, and have that be released on the same day as a live action Barbie movie. Like, it's just like the fact that they were both released on the same day is hilarious. And I feel like they did that to like, yeah, obviously boost the popularity of both of the movies up, just to, and to see, which one of them would do the best, and yeah, props to them for, if this was done on purpose. I have a feeling it was. But yeah, it I mean, it's got, it ever since they announced the release dates with those trailers back in December, it's gotten everyone more and more hyped for, it's gotten everyone, really hyped for both of these movies, and it's gotten them talking about them, nonstop, and everyone talking about how these two movies are going to be the big blockbuster hits of the summer. And yeah, and I hope they are, because like, other than Across the Spider-Verse, none of the other movies this summer have really caught my eye enough to where I'm like, oh, I gotta go see that in theaters. It's, to me, it's just been like, okay, well, I might just wait for this for streaming. But with the exceptions of Across the Spider-Verse, and Oppenheimer and Barbie, those are the only three movies, well, from June, the beginning of June to now, that I've seen this summer. Because obviously, if you count May, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and was that that actually that may have been the only movie I saw in May. But anyway, so yeah, I haven't seen as many movies this summer as like I did last summer, just because nothing really quite caught my eye enough to where I felt like I needed to go see it in theaters, But yeah, these three are definitely the exceptions, in terms of all the summer blockbuster movies. But yeah, so Barbie, well, is based on the toy Barbie, and basically it's a live action film, and the plot basically follows Barbie and Ken and all the other Barbies and Kens that live in Barbie Land, basically just living out their lives, happy and just partying all the time, and just living their lives, you know, the best they're living their best lives, you know, just partying at night and just relaxing by the day, you know, just kind of, you know, just having the same routine every day, you know, just kind of getting up, eating breakfast, you know, working, partying, you know, just having fun. But one day Barbie starts to have an existential crisis, and and she asks at one of her girls' nights, disco slumber parties, she just randomly blurts out, "Hey, you guys ever think about dying and death?" And then, you know, the party just grinds to a halt, and everyone's like, "What did you just say?" And she's like, "I mean, I'm dying to keep this party going, you know." And you know, everyone just goes back to partying like that nothing happened. And you know, and it only gets weirder from there, because not only does she have these like thoughts of dread and death, but she's experiencing all these complex human emotions like sadness and yeah, fear of death, you know, and anxiety, and she's feeling imperfect. And not only that, but her feet, instead of because you know how like all the Barbie dolls have the they're on their heels, like they're on their tippy toes. Well, her feet go flat like the next day, and everyone starts freaking out that her feet are flat. And so she's like, "Okay, you know what? I'm gonna go to the real world and see how I can reverse this." And naturally, Ken tags along, unbeknownst to her for like the first part of the trip. But he tags along, and you know, because he wants to see the real world and help Barbie. And so they go and try to figure out how, you know, to go about this. You know, how are they gonna fix this and return Barbie back to her normal, more plastic self instead of the sort of human self that she's becoming, you know, or the more human self that, yeah, she's turning into, and yeah, see how they can fix it and turn her back to normal, so that way they can just go back to their blissfully unaware, happy existences, you know. And but while that's going on, word gets out at Mattel that there's a Barbie and Ken doll loose in the real world. So the CEO of Mattel, played by Will Ferrell, you know, has to stop them. And of course, they're you know, it only gets more and more chaotic from there. But yeah, the movie was fantastic. It was hilarious, and it was even better than I thought a Barbie movie could be. And I had a feeling from that first trailer that they released in December, that first teaser trailer, the just the look and style of the movie and just the humor from that trailer led me to thinking that, okay, this movie looks like it's gonna be really funny and probably really smart and clever too. And not to mention, I just love visually like the style of it, like how just bright and colorful it looks. Like the set designers and the costume department really deserve you know, like hats off to them. They really deserve a shout out for just making like all the costumes that all the Barbies and Kens wore throughout the movie, you know, look so different and unique and colorful. And also the set designers for making Barbie Land look so fun and vibrant and plastic and colorful too. It just, you know, it looked like it almost looked like an amusement park, you know. It's like, hey, I kind of want to go there. It just you know, like the beach and just the plastic waves and and all that, and just the pools and the houses not having any like side walls, you know, because you know when you open the Barbie doll houses, they don't have like you know, like there's an open wall to where like you can like see what's going on inside the house. So I thought that was cool. Like it's like, oh yeah, like nice attention to detail. The fact that they don't have you know, the fact that they have an exposed wall on each of their houses, all the Barbies and Kens do. To where it's like, oh yeah, you can see what's going on inside the house. And also, speaking of nice attention to detail, I like the fact that they had every time Barbie, like if she was on her roof, anytime she would step down from her roof to get to the ground, she would just float down. Because I mean, and this goes for anyone who's played with any toys, like, you know, whether they're Barbies or Legos or anything. Like if you had like a little mini figurine and you like built a house, or you had a dollhouse for them, or some you know, or you were just playing pretend and you thought, were like, oh, this table's a house, you know, or this is their base or whatever, you know, like you or you had like a superhero action figure or something, you wouldn't actually take the time to walk them down the stairs, or you know, you would just like pretend they could fly for a second and just float them down back to the ground, you know. And I just thought, like, you know, that to me, I thought that was hilarious because I'm like, yeah, that's totally what I used to do with like my Legos. When I had Legos, I wouldn't take the time to actually have the Lego figurines, you know, take a step by step down the stairs of the house or whatever, you know, place they were at, you know, like that I had that came with the set. You know, I was like, no, I'm just gonna, you know, whoop, like go one, take one huge step down the stairs or just go from the outside of the building, you know. And so I thought that was really cool. I liked that little attention to detail. But yeah, no, every joke with well, okay, yeah, first of all, wait, to go to the acting real quick. I loved the acting from everyone. Everyone brought their A game. Same with Oppenheimer. Everyone brought their A game to this movie, and you could tell that they were all having just like the time of their lives, you know, hamming it up in a way, but like playing just like these really happy, upbeat, positive characters. And Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling killed it. I feel like as Barbie and Ken. And again, going back to my celebrity crushes, I have another, you know, huge celebrity crush on Margot Robbie. And she was part of the reason I went to go see the movie, and also partly because I thought it genuinely looked funny and that it looked like it would be a good time, you know, be a good movie. But yeah, she's another celebrity crush of mine. I think she's not only is she gorgeous, but I think she's also an incredibly talented actress. You know, she was in The Wolf of Wall Street. You know, she's Harley Quinn and the DC or the those three DC movies and the DCEU. She's you know played a fantastic Harley Quinn, and she's been in some more stuff. But like those are two of like her big roles, and now she's Barbie, and I think she was the perfect person to play Barbie. And I'm glad that that Greta Gerwig was attached to the project and Margot Robbie was cast as Barbie, because originally what I read was that it was originally supposed to be Amy Schumer was supposed to play, and then later Anne Hathaway was supposed to play Barbie, which Anne Hathaway wouldn't have been too bad, but I couldn't really see Amy Schumer playing that perfect of a Barbie. But I feel like Margot Robbie was like, if you were gonna cast anyone to play Barbie, she was the perfect choice. And yeah, she was great, and I loved her dynamic with Ken. You know, I thought Barbie, like, no matter what their relationship is, whether it's platonic or romantic, which I mean obviously it's platonic, but like throughout the movie Ken wants something more from his relationship with Barbie. He wants something more romantic, and then there's several instances throughout the movie where Barbie's just friend zoning him. And she's like, she's not being an asshole about it, but she's like, look, Ken, I would just appreciate it if, you know, we could just stay friends, because I really like you. I don't like you that way. And Ken, and he's not being an asshole either. He's not like, I, you know, like, oh, I'm never gonna take no for an answer. But you know, he's so persistent, while still kind of being nice about it. And he's just like, but I love you, you know. And but I loved that aspect to their dynamic, their friendship, and all the jokes that they made when they went to the real world was great. Just Bart, you know, like when they get to the real world, and I love the process, because like the way they get to the real world is like they drive out of Barbie Land, and then they have to go onto a snowmobile. They drive to a snowmobile that takes them to a boat that takes them to a camper that takes them to I forgot. It was, you know, it was like five or six different vehicles they had to take, and then eventually somehow they wound up in the real world at Venice Beach, in Los Angeles. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And they make a joke about that in when we go to Mattel, and there's this guy, you know, telling the CEO, Will Ferrell's character. He's like, hey, look, are we how, is so is Barbie Land like a real place, or is it like a metaphor for like, you know, not wanting to leave your childhood behind, and you know the magic of playing with your toys? And the CEOs and the CEO and everyone else are like, yes, like in unison. They're like, oh, it's whatever you want it to be. It's both, you know. So I like how that was kind of the movie in a way telling the audience like, don't not to not take it seriously, but like don't think about it too hard, because it could be either of these two things. You know, it's whatever you want it to be too. You know. But I thought that was hilarious. And yeah, so, and yeah, and Ryan Gosling played a perfect Ken too. I thought he was a good choice for Ken too. And all the other Barbies and Kens were great. You know, because there are different iterations of Barbies and Kens of all different races and sizes, and you know, there's a disabled Barbie, there's a handicapped Barbie, there's a black Barbie, there's an Asian Ken, you know, like it was cool to see all the other different Barbies and Kens like from throughout the years, living in Barbie Land with the stereotypical Barbie and Ken, you know, the blonde white Barbie and Ken. And yeah, they were cool. I liked Issa Rae's Barbie. She was funny. She had some funny scenes. Simu Liu's, who played Shang-Chi in The Legend of the Ten Rings. I thought he was great as one of the other Kens, and I liked his there's a feud that kind of builds up with like a petty rivalry that builds up throughout the movie with the main Ken, you know, Ryan Gosling's Ken, and Simu Liu's Ken, and you know, they had some hilarious lines of dialogue. And but yeah, like every scene where they go to the real world, or I mean all the scenes where Barbie and Ken are in the real world are hilarious, because Barbie's expecting the real world to be exactly like Barbie world, and she's like, oh well, Barbie, you know, we've made so much progress for women's rights and like, you know, throughout the years. So like she's expecting like the women to run everything, or at least everyone be equal. And then, you know, she comes to realize, oh, it's not, it's like the exact opposite of Barbie Land. Like she walks up to she sees a construction site, her and Ken, and she sees the construction site, and she's like, oh, I'll walk up to these construction workers. It'll be nice to see some women working, you know, getting sweaty and all that, you know, getting dirty and sweaty, putting in a hard day's work. And then she walks up and it's just a bunch of construction workers, and they're just like, and they spout out the most cliched, you know, cheesiest lines that you know, whenever you see a construction worker and a beautiful woman in a movie, you know, it's not like, hey, you got fries with that shake, baby, you know, shit like that, you know, like stereotypical cliche shit like that. And but that scene was funny. The scene where Ken is in a doctor's office, he's dressed, and he's dressed as a cowboy, or like how an ice skater, like a Las Vegas ice skater, would think a cowboy dresses. He's dressed like that, and he's talking to a female doctor, and he's like, she's like, I can't let you perform an appendectomy. And he's like, but I'm a doctor. And she's like, you're not a doctor. And I thought that scene was hilarious, because you know, all the Barbies and Kens have like a wide assortment of you know, outfits, of costumes. So naturally, because Ken has a doctor's outfit, and so does Barbie, and Barbie has an astronaut outfit, and Ken has a lifeguard outfit, you know. So naturally, since they have all these different outfits, of course they would think that they're experts at whatever occupation there was to ever exist. So Ken would obviously think, oh, I'd be a good doctor, you know, because I have a doctor's I have a doctor's uniform. So that was great. And there's, you know, a bunch of funny jokes with that. Him taking patriarchy back to Barbie Land, and the Kens taking over, and everything he knows about patriarchy is essentially just cowboys and horses and, you know, beer commercials and scantily clad women. And that was great. Like when Barbie and oh, and also America Ferrera, I forgot to mention, she plays Gloria. She's like the CEO's executive assistant, and she's like a high up employee at Mattel. I thought she did a great job as that character of Gloria, and I loved her dynamic with her daughter and Sasha, and how that grew and developed throughout the movie. And I loved when she met up with Barbie. I loved when Gloria meets up with Barbie. I loved their friendship. It's very wholesome and sweet. But when Barbie takes Gloria and Sasha back to the real, or back to Barbie Land, you know, she gets there to find out Ken's like, you know, turned everything into topsy turvy, and she's like, oh shit, what do we do now? And the way they resolve that, I won't say how, but it's the climax is hilarious. And you know, it leads to, yeah, a very hilarious climax with a very hilarious song number from a musical number from like a love ballad from Ken. But yeah, that was fantastic. And also, yeah, going back to Will Ferrell's character, I don't think he has a net. I think he's just the CEO, if I'm not mistaken. Let me look. Yeah, he's the CEO of Mattel. That's what he's credited as. But he does a great job. I mean, he's just as funny as always. And you know, I guess it's because he's like a higher up. Like he's the CEO of this big corporation. He's wearing a suit, you know, and how kind of cartoony in a way. He's acting, you know, I mean, on purpose, obviously. It kind of reminded me of his performance of as Lord Business in the Lego Movie, you know, because he, Lord Business was also a very goofy, but also kind of very threatening at times, intense character, you know, and you know, had some hilarious lines of dialogue, and he wore a suit, and you know, very demanding at times, you know, but he kind of, you know, that character gave me very huge President Business vibes, or Lord Business vibes. But yeah, so he killed it in his role. And yeah, I guess that's it from the acting side of everything, but everyone does a great job. And there's some surprise cameos you might not expect, or you won't see coming in the film. And one of them that happens in Barbie Land, you know, got a good laugh out of me. I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming. It was hilarious. But yeah, so I'm trying to think. So yeah, the set designers did a great job. The costume department, the acting was great. The movie was hilarious. And also to go back to, it reminded me of the Lego Movie. It also reminds me of the Lego Movie in a sense that it's a lighthearted, goofy comedy about a toy or in a line of toys. But at the same time, it also has some deep, more emotional, heartfelt moments that you might not see coming upon first watch. Because, you know, like the Lego Movie seemed to be, when the trailer for that first came out, it seemed like, oh, this looks like it'll be good and funny. Although a lot of people were expecting it to just be a cash grab. And, you know, obviously it was promoting the Legos, the Lego products, but, or the Lego product, not products. But, you know, it had a message and it had heart and it was actually had good writing and humor. And this movie does that too, where it's like, obviously it's promoting a toy, you know, a toy brand, Barbie. But at the same time, it's smart, it's cleverly written, it's funny, and it's got some deep emotional, heartfelt moments too. And, you know, talking about not only what it means to be human and like growing up playing with your toys and never being too old to like, you know, play with your toys every now and then, you know, like that you had from childhood, you know, just reminisce, you know, and revel in the nostalgia of when you were a kid and when things were simpler. But also it talks about kind of like, you know, femininity, issues that women face today and like, you know, some double standards that go on with between women and men in the real world and kind of how Barbie played a huge role in that, both the good and bad sides of it. And I thought that was cool. And I didn't really feel like it was like it felt naturally, you know, woven into the story. It didn't really feel like they really stopped the movie to like an ass grinding halt and said, hey, this is what everything, we're just going to dump everything that we think about, you know, like what women are facing today and just stop the plot of the movie and stop the jokes to tell you. It's like, no, I mean, they told you, but like, it didn't really feel like it was forced or ham fisted or stopped what was going on in the movie, you know? And so I appreciated it for that. And the ending was sweet, you know, and I won't say what happens in the ending, but there's a hilarious like bait and switch because you think Barbie's about to do one thing, or she's like going to do one thing. And then the last line of dialogue she has, leads you to realize, oh, it's something else. Or this isn't what she was going to do. She's going to do this. Okay. Shit. I didn't see that coming. So I won't explain what it is, but you'll see what I mean when you see the movie. And that actually I was like surprised by that line that caught me off guard. And I laughed at that. That was pretty good. But yeah, I just, oh, and the soundtrack was great too. I loved the album, the music throughout was great. It was kind of a musical in a way because, you know, they played the album throughout the songs from the album throughout the movie. And I listened to the whole album on my way to the theater before seeing Oppenheimer and Barbie. And I thought it was great. It was very catchy, very upbeat and cheerful. And it had some hip hop pop and a little bit of rock and like a little bit of a love ballad or two thrown in. You know, some piano mixed in. So, I mean, you know, it all sounded very nice. It all blended together, really well. And yeah, that was great. And I guess that's pretty much it. But yeah, it was, well, let's see what else. Yeah, I guess that was pretty much it. But, yeah. And it was just, it was a great movie and yeah, it did what it did what I hoped it would do and more. And yeah, it was hilarious. And I think it'll also end up in my top 10 favorite movies of the year. And yeah, I'd give it an 8.5 out of 10. So And honestly, I hope both of these movies, I hope both Oppenheimer and Barbie do well this weekend. And I hope they, besides Across the Spider-Verse, I hope they, you know, are like two of the biggest movies of the summer, because, you know, the summer's been lacking in terms of like big blockbuster movies, you know, like grossing a lot of money. So I hope they do well, because they're both, you can tell, like, Christopher Nolan and Greta Gerwig put their heart and soul and time and energy into making both of these movies. And while they're very different in tone and style and everything, you can tell that the time and effort was put into making these movies the best they could be, you know. And from, you know, not only the writing, but the acting from everyone in both movies, and in Barbie's case, the humor, you know, and in Nolan's case, the drama, you know, like everything in both movies comes together near perfectly, and I love both of them. And I think it's hilarious too that they both cost the same amount of money. Their budgets are both $100 million, and I just find that even more hilarious, because you'd think that Oppenheimer, I don't know, to me I felt like Oppenheimer would cost more because it's about the creation of the atomic bomb. And while, you know, obviously it wasn't an explosion fest every like 10, 15 minutes throughout the movie, I figured, oh, well, with them building an atomic bomb and using practical effects, I figured that might cost more. But the fact they're both the same amount of money, I find that fascinating and hilarious. And, but yeah, and I hope, and it'd be funny if they both ended up their box office run at the same, making the same amount of money, since they both cost the same amount. But who knows? But yeah, I loved this movie. I had a huge smile on my face the whole time. I was grinning like an idiot. And, yeah, I hope it does well. And hopefully Oppenheimer does well too. But yeah, so I guess that does it for my review of Barbie too. And I hope you guys enjoyed my double review. Again, sorry for the day-long delay. I just, you know, well, you know why. But yeah, I just figured I'd go ahead and wait just a little bit. You know, wait until the next day and review it. Review the two of them. And I thank you all for waiting. But yeah, so, I guess that does it for tonight's episode. Join me next, and I say Friday, it'll probably end up being Saturday, because I want to listen to the album a couple times at least. But, join me next, Saturday for my review of Post Malone's, upcoming fifth album, Alston. That comes out next Friday. I'll listen to it a couple times, and I'll probably post my review sometime Saturday afternoon or Saturday night, so... And that will be the season 6 finale. And sometime after I post that episode, I'll post a trailer for what's to come for season 7, which is going to premiere September 8th. I've decided. I was trying to decide between whether I wanted to premiere season 7 on the 1st of the month of September or the 8th, and I decided to start at the 8th of September. So, yeah, I guess that's it. So, with that being said, and guys, go see both movies if you can, because I honestly recommend both of them. I think you'll love both of them for different reasons, but definitely go see them both. But yeah, so I guess that does it for tonight's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I will see you all next weekend. And with that being said, I hope you guys have a great weekend, and I will see you all next Saturday. And until then, take care.